You are listening to the United States of Football Show, your source for American soccer news, views, and opinions. And it's the next episode of the United States of Football Show. It is January 19th, 2014. We are recording. It's Sunday night. A little later than usual, but Robert, it's great to hear from you. Nice to get together. This is basically a weekly show, roughly, so it's nice to hear from you and get a chance to talk about the latest happenings in MLS.
It's not that late. It's, you know, it's morning somewhere, so it could be considered early depending on how you view the world.
Yeah, and it's a little earlier on the West Coast, I suppose, where many people in this country were watching, including us, were watching some National Football League. I know that kind of goes against the fabric of the soccer movement in this country, but unfortunately, I am still an NFL fan, so
yeah.
Well, maybe not unfortunately, but I don't know.
You're insecure enough where you can't watch the NFL or Major League Baseball or MLB or the same thing, or NBA or anything else, another sport, then you know maybe you need to just let off the caffeine a little bit. People can like more than one sport. It's okay. Football and soccer, football and throwball are not exactly mortal enemies here.
Yeah. Well, I think you're at a point in this country. I mean, it's just amazing in this country the breadth of different ideas and philosophies on things. And, you know, you got some people who are like dead set for MLS and international soccer's, you know, international leagues is, you know, you aren't going to talk about there. It's nothing compared to, you know, the competitiveness of MLS, and as well, oh, we're going to watch a lot of NFL, but then you have the people who are the people who follow more of the European style, you know, leagues and decry MLS. I don't know. It's just there's such a continuum in this country of philosophies, and I'm sort of like halfway between the two. It's like I like MLS. There are ways it could get better. I also like to catch a couple of league games from over in Europe. And, you know, I have to say I grew up watching the NFL, and I've been a fan of the NFL a lot longer than soccer. So, you know, I'm not going to be ashamed of that. And so if anybody else takes issue with that, oh well. So anyway, I guess that's a long soliloquy. But
well, no, this is something we had touched on earlier, and I not to derail us and our conversation too much. But, you know, we've talked about this in the past, the idea of the exclusivity of MLS fans sometimes, the idea like you must like this or you must think this is the best, and anything else that competes with it is vastly inferior, no matter what it is, whether it's football or the Premier League or something, you know, international soccer. And, you know, that's just short-sighted and stupid, to be honest with you. I mean, we all have a different taste. We all like different things. You know, we don't sit down and eat hamburgers with red wine every night. You know, we mix it up. And this should be the same with sports. Just, you know, watch what you like. I'm going to be watching a lot of curling over the next 2 months. You know, judge away for that. But, you know, that's just my cup of tea when it comes to the Winter Olympics.
And if you watch Chelsea versus Manchester United today, that was immediately followed by curling.
Yes, so. As well it should be.
Yeah. So we're going to move into section one here. We wanted to talk a bit about a couple of the topics that came up this week are based on what we would call some perceived or potentially real inequities or inequalities in Major League Soccer and the distinct lack of transparency that seems to be prevalent within the league and some of the stuff that's going on that not only is going on but has gone on, and the way that those past events look in the current light. You know, interpret them how you want, but it just seems like it needs to be more transparency and there isn't. So I guess, Robert, I'll start with just talking a little bit about this Maurice Adu. Not Freddie Adu, mind you, not that phenom teenager that now is over in Brazil somewhere.
That binds DC United and Philadelphia Union fans together in their confusion as to where his talent went.
Right. Maurice Adu, the defensive midfielder slash center back that got his start in MLS with Toronto, then made his way over to Rangers in Scotland a number of years ago, and made a move recently after Rangers were relegated due to their financial insolvency. He moved to Stoke City, where he couldn't get any time on the pitch. He was loaned out to Bursaspor for a period of time and returned to Stoke to then again be benched and see very little time, not even in the 18. So with the stories of Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe, more Michael Bradley we'll say than Jermaine Defoe, but with that coming about, there was these inklings that, gee, this may be the point where more American internationals will come back. You know, you had Clint Dempsey, now you have Michael Bradley. And so now this rumor pops up with Maurice Adu. And Robert, I guess maybe I'll pass it to you to maybe start talking about how DC United is involved in this, and then how eventually now it's the Union that are involved in this.
Yeah, you know, it's gotten so crazy over the past couple of weeks that I'm trying to, or past week that I'm trying to remember where it started. Essentially, what it came down to was DC United, as benefits their terrible record last year, has the first spot in the allocation draft, or allocation order or whatever. So for returning U.S. men's national team players who aren't Clint Dempsey or Michael Bradley, they're able to have first dibs whether to take the player and offer them a contract. With the Maurice Adu situation swirling around, and Earl, you're going to have to refresh my memory on this one. Basically, there was this trade. What happened? There was the trade between DC United and Philadelphia.
Right. Yeah, there was a trade.
That's right. I'm sorry. Now I've just triggered my own memory. Jeff Park comes over to DC United from Philadelphia in addition to that, DC and Philadelphia swapped allocation spots. Philadelphia was, I believe, right, sixth. DC United was, of course, first. So DC United gets the sixth allocation spot and Jeff Park. Philadelphia gets the first allocation slot and maybe some monies or something like that. So,
right. And Ethan White.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's right. And Ethan White, which is actually pretty good for Philadelphia. I think overall, that's a nice pickup for them. And for DC United, Jeff Park, it's okay. We'll leave it at that. So the reason why this became, for the DC United perspective, this was a confusing thing because one of the benefits of being so terrible is you can get somebody good coming back. And as we said, with the Michael Bradley coming over to Toronto FC, there was this assumption that there would be some pretty decent players trying to make a return to MLS to make some money. You know, one of them being Maurice Adu, and there's always other rumors on Gucci and Yewu and others that are always rumored to come back, Michael Parkhurst, and so on and so forth. So it was a very confusing situation, and then the Maurice Adu rumor comes out, which is, well, Philadelphia is interested in picking up Maurice Adu to bolster their defense. They're in negotiations with him, and so that's where everybody goes, oh, this is just their way of getting Maurice Adu to – you know, clearing up space and being first in the allocation order. Because as Earl explained, because I was confused on this, and he is very good about picking out the rules, because he would – maybe, Earl, maybe you should explain why Maurice Adu would not get the Michael Bradley / Clint Dempsey exemption.
Okay, yeah. I mean, and this is where, again, there's a lot of transparency issues. But so Clint Dempsey and Michael Bradley were both brought over through transfer fees paid – directly by Major League Soccer, and there may be portions of it that are paid by the team themselves, but Major League Soccer had basically not only negotiated that transfer fee, but also paid at least a portion of it. So that's why, I mean, and there were tweets in the past and articles that listed that the reason that Clint Dempsey came over was because he was a designated player that came back as an American international. So, you know, that you have an MLS official saying that back in August or whenever it happened. Now you have this change where, okay, yes, for Michael Bradley it was that way, and he is a DP, but now you have Maurice Adu, who there is we have, you know, there's some salary information getting thrown around. 1.2 is what I've heard is the number that he's looking for, and that maybe even the union. I mean, there was Jeff Carlisle had an early rumor from ESPN that had been agreed upon by the two entities, by Philadelphia and by Maurice Adu and his agent, and the MLS balked at that.
By the way, we've now figured out why Stoke City buys up so many American players, because they know they can sell them back to MLS and make a tidy profit at some point.
I guess.
It's genius. I was selling Stoke short all these years.
So anyway, so you have this trade where, you know, Philadelphia obviously needs a little bit of a boost. They've been faltering. I mean, DC United's the same way. Now, let's go back.
DC United's been cratering, but that's a different matter.
Well, actually, we probably ought to just go back. And I mean, we weren't even able to confirm this Michael Bradley being signed by TFC last time. That did go through, if you didn't already gather that by the way we've been talking. I mean, DC themselves should have some spite over the fact that Michael Bradley comes back and, you know, basically gets handed to Toronto because Toronto's willing to pay the largest amount. So, and, you know, with all this, I mean,
and of course, we don't know exactly what the negotiations were, because if you remember with the Clint Dempsey deal, actually, no, it was with Michael Bradley. Philadelphia was in play for that allegedly, but couldn't come up with the cash. So that's one team we heard of. We don't know how many others were in for Michael Bradley, or even if he was made available to all the other teams. So, you know, maybe even DC was interested, but we just don't know. And I think that's part of the problem that we're trying to talk about here.
Right. And so what ends up happening here is that you have all of this confusion, and the average soccer fan over in Europe, you know, or that follows teams over in Europe, I mean, they're going to say, okay, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. The team that's willing to throw around the most money is going to get the most, you know, get the best players. You know, but MLS prides itself on parity and on helping the disadvantaged team get better because, you know, we're going to, you know, run this allocation order, allocation draft, whatever you want to call it. Allocation lottery. You know, again, the terminology is often similar, and, you know, so similar that it makes people confused even in that, and I think is intentionally confusing. But so one of the conundrums is DC was the worst team in record last year, even though they did win a cup, worst team in record. They have the top draft pick. The player that could most help them be able to get out of this hole would be Michael Bradley. And yet Michael Bradley is not there and being able to be pulled into this allocation draft in order to give it to the team that is most in need of this player. Now, maybe DC wouldn't want to pay him, but again, it just speaks to some of the hypocrisy that's going on in the league right now. And they really need to get this cleared up by the next collective bargaining agreement, because I mean, you have fans that are just going, you know, bat crazy over this, wondering why Seattle and Toronto seem to be getting, you know, favorites played for them. And then you have a team like Philadelphia that's getting pushback from the league when they want to settle, you know, a contract with Maurice Adu for, granted, $1.2 million seems like an awful lot for him. But to me, $6.5 million might be an awful lot for Michael Bradley. I don't know. I mean, Toronto FC is throwing around somewhere between 85 and 100 million in this whole process between Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley, and MLS is like, hey, cool, okay, whatever. And then you know, another team wants to spend, you know, 1.2 million, then there's something wrong with it. I don't know. I mean,
well,
Robert,
let me,
why don't you pick up some of the
yeah, let me go a couple of different ways with this. Let me start by saying that I find it interesting that the league, and basically the reason we've been told via rumor is that the league blocked this because of Philadelphia cash flow problems. There were some concerns about payroll and so on and so forth like that.
No, I don't think that's the case.
That has been dismissed as a rumor, because that's a hot rumor that I saw floating around. But let me just point out this. If that's the case, I can't imagine that the finances of the union are that much worse or that let me put it this way. They're not much worse than Toronto FC, who is not even selling tickets anymore. I mean, their attendance is so bad for a very good reason that I can't imagine that their profits are that much better than the Philadelphia Union's profits, where the Philadelphia actually, you know, sells out or comes close to selling out their stadium. So that was always a suspicious thing to me. I'll play devil's advocate to this, but I have a bigger gripe that I'll leave for a few minutes from now. Mm-hmm. To respond to what you said, Earl, if I'm the league management, this league is still in its formative years, let's be honest, even though it's been around now for almost 20 years, we're still in a competitive market space. We're competing with overseas soccer markets. We're competing with domestic sports leagues, so on and so forth. There's only so many dollars to chase in the sports marketplace in the United States. We need to do our best to maximize what we get in from fans, hardcore fans, whatever. It makes sense from that perspective to try and fit players with markets where not only can they be afforded, but where they can be marketed properly. And with Michael Bradley, you know, it made sense because TFC was in for Clint Dempsey. They got denied that. You know, it's a good, solid soccer marketplace. It makes sense to boost the Canadian market for MLS. Let's put him there. I can see that. You used to talk about fans complaining. We're actually seeing an uptick in attendance. We're seeing, even though the TV ratings are bad, for the big matches, they're pretty good. I'm not seeing fans running away from this league because of this. In fact, if anything, you're probably going to see a boost in attendance because of Michael Bradley, Clint Dempsey, and some of these returning players. So I think that to play devil's advocate, a lot of what you're hearing in complaints are internet complainers and people that aren't MLS fans anyway, the Euro snobs. Is this really going to hurt MLS's bottom line if they're cherry picking where these players go? Probably not. I mean, it's how the game is played. You know, it's amazing how the NBA, every game, even if it's a blowout, ends up being close at the end. It's amazing how in the NFL, every playoff game is within 10 points, the final score. It's the way leagues work. It's entertainment, and sometimes they have to take it into their own hands to make sure that the entertainment value is maximized so they can gain the most money from it. And some people are going to complain, absolutely, but for the most part, people are going to keep coming through the turnstiles, and it's going to be a minor issue. That's my devil's advocate case.
Well, I mean, that's a fine case to play because, you know, if you want to look at record over the last, you know, series of years, you're going to probably say that Toronto FC has been more abysmal than DC United. I mean, DC went to the conference final in 2012, so it's not like they've enjoyed an extended run of, you know, I mean, granted, before that, and, you know, maybe 2-3 years before that, they were, you know, DC was in the tank. But, you know, Ben Olsen, you know, everybody had thought that they had turned the corner, and with guys like, you know, Chris Pontius and, you know, Dwayne Di Rosario, you know, Andy Nahar, now he's gone, but, you know, Nick De Leon, I mean, they've gotten, Luis Silva, I believe, from
TFC.
TFC. Yep. I mean, it's not exactly, you know, Bill Amede at the back. I mean, it's not exactly a crappy team on paper and going into this past year. It just so happened they had some injuries and just the bottom fell out. But so, I mean, if you're looking at it from that standpoint, Toronto FC has enjoyed an extended absence as far as being able to have any kind of meaningful results, aside from maybe a CONCACAF Champions League run here or there. So, you know, picking that isn't a big deal for me, aside from the fact that Michael Bradley probably would be a much more beloved player in the United States as opposed to Canada. But, I mean, he's not a Canadian international, he's a United States international, but I'm sure that Toronto will still embrace him as well as Jermaine Defoe and all. I mean, this team ought to compete for a supporter shield if they can get their act together and come together and be, you know, a solid team come March or April and really start putting the results together. But so anyway, back to Maurice Adu. As far as I know, it's still like in limbo. The union are negotiating along with MLS. You know, Nick Sakevich, who is the union CEO, has, you know, the draft was in town this week, and there were some interviews with him, and he had indicated, you know, this isn't like it's us against the league or us against, you know, Marie Seydoux or Marie Seydoux and us against the league. It's the league and the union who are one entity and Adu. But it just sounds like they are a significant amount apart in what they feel like they should make. And so the problem is going to be, okay, so the last issue with this whole salary deal with Marie Seydoux is he is a benchmark. Absolutely, if he comes back here and is making $1.2 million, that's a benchmark that MLS does not want to see happen.
Yes.
You do not, you know, they don't want to see guys like Janino or Kyle Beckerman or Patrice Bernier or Ozzy Alonso or your typical, defensive midfielder, you know, types saying, gee, look at how much he's making. Why am I only making $300,000 or whatever? You know, it's like it automatically, you know, raises the bar. The trouble is I think that Major League Soccer may have already raised the bar in other areas. But you wanted to say something, Robert?
Yeah, I was going to say, don't also forget other fringe U.S. national team players. Marie Seydoux is kind of, I think we're all assuming he's got a pretty good shot at making Brazil. But what I got about guys like Yedlin, even starters like Matt Beisler, some of these guys that are already in MLS that are either assumed to be starters or assumed to be backups or on the fringe. I mean, there's a bunch of these guys throughout MLS that aren't making $1.2 million. What does Matt Beisler deserve to make with the league? He's not making $1.2 million. If I'm him, I'm looking at this deal and saying, I hope it gets done because I want to go to Sporting Kansas City and say, hey, I'm playing ahead of this guy on the national team. I think I'm worth at least $1.5, $2 million. Or I'm going to bolt to a league that will pay me that much. So I don't think it's just defensive midfielders. I think it's other U.S. national team players that are looking for a payday. And I don't blame them. If I see Marie Seydoux getting that much money, I'm going to the league and saying I deserve this much as well.
Yeah, and so you're at a point where the league is, you know, really between a rock and a hard place. And I, you know what? I think what we should do is let's take a break because I think there's more to talk about with this subject.
Yes, I have a big announcement to make on this subject.
Oh, really?
Yeah, see, oh, nice. I like how I teased that right before the break. That was good.
That's awesome. So, yeah, when we get back, we're going to talk more about the lack of transparency in MLS, some other little issues that are coming up and about. And, you know, Robert has got some real hot-button news. So when we get back, we will talk about it. You are listening to the United States of Football Show, brought to you by Simply Football and World Football Daily. Listen to the B-Side Shuffle as we go to break. I'm glad you guys are still there. It's the second segment of the United States of Football Show. Earl Reed with Robert Hay. And we're going to continue on with our, I guess this is blowing up into a two-section pseudo-rant, but I mean it's it's discussing the topics of, you know, that are impacting Major League Soccer and the fans that want to support it but maybe have some real reservations about certain directions that the league goes in. So,
well, I think, Earl, I wouldn't even use the word rant. I think we've done a very good job of trying to keep it as even keel and somewhat balanced as possible. I mean, there hasn't been any crazy angry rants yet. So good. I think, you know, golf clap for both of us.
I'll bet the league considers it a rant.
Well, their opinions are much different than normal people's, but we'll leave it at that.
So, you know, we're going to leave the super draft news for the third segment, but one thing that came up out of the super draft was that Vancouver, with the seventh pick, drafted a fellow by the name of Andre Lewis, and unfortunately for them, for Vancouver, what they failed to realize is that Andre Lewis had already signed a contract with the New York Cosmos. And so this looked like the other night on Twitter, there was a lot of stuff going down, and people were theorizing that, oh, gee, this is NASL trying to challenge the antitrust law and, you know, trying to knock down MLS and, you know, yada, yada, yada. Well, you know, in the end, it turns out that they've already worked out a deal to an extent between MLS, New York, and Vancouver, and all that stuff. But it all kind of ties into this deal where it's like, you know, they have this draft, and, you know, Andre Lewis, why would he be going to the Cosmos? Well, it's because the Cosmos is likely offering him more money. and so,
and because everyone's fleeing Vancouver at this point faster than rats off a sinking ship.
Right. But I think that it was
probably the money.
Yeah. I think that he had already, since he had already signed, you know, but it, I don't know. It's just a really strange situation, but it really comes back to the fact that MLS, they just aren't paying competitively to the rest of the world. And that's where the single entity stuff comes in, where it's like they've in a sense colluded together in order to keep salaries down. And so then when you get a player like Maurice Adoo or Michael Bradley or Clint Dempsey or Landon Donovan earlier, David Beckham, you know, any of these guys coming back, you're going to pay a premium for them because guess what? You're really playing ball in a closed market as far as salaries go, you know? And you again have players making under 50,000 a year in this league, and some of them end up being starters, and it's just, you know, it's pretty sad state for the league. So, I mean, Robert, what do you think needs to be the next steps as far as this situation goes within MLS, you know, with the collective bargaining agreement with the players union coming up? What do you see happening, and what do you think MLS should try to do?
Well, here's what I think should happen, and this is going a little bit outside of the structure of your question, but this is kind of the thing I teased at a little bit before we went to the break. I've been evolving on this issue, to use a political term, and I've kind of wrestled with it, and really the past couple of weeks have brought it to a head, and I think I'm comfortable enough to announce that I have now fully entered the promotion relegation camp now. The promotion relegation now camp. Here's why. So we have the situations that happened with Michael Bradley, basically going to where the league said, okay, this is where we want this player, this is where we want him to play. And then we have Maurice Adoo coming in and saying, well, he's working out a deal with Philadelphia, and the league saying, no, we really don't want you here. You know, this isn't going to work out for you because for whatever reason, assuming it's going to raise salaries to a point where they don't want it to be raised. Then you have the Andre Lewis situation where he's able to be signed by the Cosmos. We're assuming again because of money. At this point, we're creating – we have a league in MLS that has tried to – or at least has stated the opinion that they want a balanced league where anybody can win the cup and there's a lot of competitive balance. But we already are starting to see a tilt in the playing field. Teams like Colorado we won't even get into like Chivas USA, but Colorado, DC United, New England, Columbus don't have the resources or the ability to compete with the Los Angeles Galaxies, the New York Red Bulls of the world. Increasingly, new teams like Seattle and maybe even one day Portland. Now, I know DC has got a lot of money to spend because they've been particularly miserable, but at the end of the day, you're starting to see an imbalance in this league where even though teams like Real Salt Lake, who are making do with, you know, shoestrings and magic tricks are making, you know, cup finals. But in reality, really, we're starting to see a haves and have-nots in the MLS system. You now have teams like the New York Cosmos who are coming in with money, backing from major prominent soccer people who are able to compete with MLS in terms of players being drafted. And I think it's just going to get worse and worse as time goes along. I really do think you're going to see the Cosmos dominating NASL just because they have the name recognition and the resources behind it. And they're going to start challenging MLS in their business model. You then have teams like New York City FC and the Miami Beckhams coming in. That's going to create even more imbalance. We almost have a European-style system already. We just don't have the thing that makes it interesting, which is promotion relegation. And if we're going to have a haves and have-nots system, let's at least have a system where we can have the have-nots go down, the haves come up, and create a competitive league instead of having teams beat up on Chivas USA every year while a New York Cosmos is spending all kinds of money beating up on everybody else in their league. Let's give these teams a chance to build their way up and admit the reality that teams are going to get star players. It's going to happen. And, I mean, financially, it's probably best for all of the leagues and teams involved that they can play in a league where the competition will be at their level. So, I used to be of the opinion that this is a 5-10 year goal. I'm beginning to think now this might be a year or two goal just to try and get this going, because it's slowly going, or it's quickly going in that direction, and we might as well just push it that way just to make it interesting.
Well, I'm not sure I'm as cutting edge as you are. I mean, that's pretty aggressive. But I'll tell you what, I think it is pretty troubling that you do have this. You're going to have a gulf here pretty soon, like you said. And that is the one thing about an open system, is that when you have new money come in, that new money comes in at the bottom, but they quickly rise. And if someone has aspirations, they can quickly make it up there. It also, I think, makes – so you not only need to have – well, before you have an open system, I think you need to have an open – you basically have to ditch the single entity. I mean, that's got to go.
Absolutely.
And that should go within the next 5 years, but I doubt it will. I think the owners are going to hold on to it way too tight, because – it's their way of ensuring that they can, get as much money out of this system as they possibly can. And so they're gonna hold this as the standard. And, unless the players are able to take a strong stand against this, I think it's just going to keep going in that direction. But, if you did get rid of the single entity, so then you had individual clubs running things, Seattle ran their thing, NYCFC ran their thing, Columbus ran their thing. Then you end up with a situation, like you said, where you have an owner, let's say at the Cosmos, that's willing to put in a bunch of money. Well, when they win the league, it helps them to come up, and then an owner that doesn't necessarily have the same aspirations goes down, and you eventually end up with this. Yes, one of the things that detractors of promotion and relegation will always say is that what you'd end up doing is concentrating your top talent in, your top league, your top teams in the top league would be in the central, hubs, your New Yorks and LAs and whatnot. But I mean, that's how these things become prosperous. I mean, that's how you can prosper in any country with soccer, is that you've got people attending matches and watching on television. And right now you're trying to make MLS a national sport when, this nation is just so vast.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, it's, I understand wanting to put maybe put a team in Minnesota and one in San Antonio and maybe get another one in St. Louis. I mean, you have a way to do that but it would take a lot of investment, and it would take a lot of innovation. And aside from doing that, I'm afraid the MLS is starting to head down that. I mean, I think we talked about in the last episode, mm-hmm. that scary road where, Don Garber said it this week. I mean, he's been asked a lot about this collective bargaining agreement coming up, and with all this money getting spent, and he still maintains that they're losing $75 to $80 million a year, something to that effect. And, it seems somewhat preposterous. If it's preposterous, if you're losing that you're going out and spending $100 million on Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
So, where the rubber hits the road here, eventually you're going to have some kind of an impasse. And, heads are going to butt. And these players making 50 grand or 100 grand, and maybe could be making 250 grand if things were different, they're going to start arguing, well, you guys are all acting together against us. That's not the way it works in Major League Baseball. That's not the way it works in the NFL. Not exactly. So how are we going to make this better? especially better for us, because right now we've been getting the shaft for the last 8 years or whatever. And so I don't know. This is coming up here in the next year, and MLS is, with all the stuff with, Toronto not selling out their stadium and bringing in these high priced superstars, you know, it's heading down this NASL from the night, you know, NASL 1.0 model, let's say, where, you know, things came a crashing down and then we end up with no professional soccer league in this country. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I just want to bring up 2 points, what you said, Earl. The first thing is about the concentration of titles and talent in the major cities. If anybody who's read Soccernomics knows that they have an entire chapter dedicated to just that fact, that in Europe, at least, the power and the titles are being concentrated in capital cities. So I don't think they were 100% accurate in terms of, you know, where, you know, who wins the UEFA Champions League every year. But if you look at it, it's the major cities, teams from major cities. It's the Barcelonas, the Madrids, the Bayern Munichs, the London teams. In a sense, Manchester United is an outlier because they are a team from a not incredibly prosperous, relatively speaking, city. But in soccer worldwide, that's where the concentration of talent and money is going, is to the major cities within the country. So in a sense, the United States would just be following the trend there. The second thing from a CBA standpoint, it's kind of interesting to me to think about this, because if I'm a player in MLS and I'm making $35,000 a year, compare myself to a player in, let's say, the NFL, when they do negotiations and things like that. As a player in the NFL, at the end of the day, you depend on the NFL to make a paycheck. You could go play in Europe or Canada or somewhere else, but the pace could be really bad, the quality could be really bad, and you'd have to figure out other ways to make money. If you're an MLS player making $39,000 a year, you probably don't want to leave home and your what you know and your family and friends, but there's a world of opportunity out there for you. You can go to Central America. You could go to Mexico. It'd be harder. You can go to Europe. But there's opportunities out there, probably more so than you would have in other sports. So not saying that all of these players would make these teams overseas, but at least there's a number of leagues where you could try your, you know, ply your trade and make probably a decent amount of money. So I think that's another thing that makes the MLS negotiations different than other sports, is the fact that we're not the top league in the sport, whereas in baseball, football, basketball, whatever, we are the top leagues, and that's an advantage that the leagues have over the players.
Right. Yeah, but I think there's another point, which is, you know, if you look at the American internationals right now, I think it would be pretty easy to say that for the most part, they're having trouble getting minutes over in Europe. Mm-hmm. And I think there is this, in maybe a slight bias against American players.
I'll agree with
and
that.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where that comes from, if you know, maybe we aren't exactly the most technically proficient, not the most tactically evolved, you know, nation. And so, you know, when it comes right down to it, I it seems to me at least that you have, you know, managers in England, managers in other countries over there that seem to want to put the Americans on the bench if they can, and not play them unless, you know, you're a Clint Dempsey and are, you know, a guy that can absolutely help your team out to the fullest extent. You know, David Moyes was another one that seemed to play, you know, obviously Tim Howard at Everton. You know, Landon Donovan went over there for stints and he was willing to play him. But, you know, for the most part, I feel like, I think that Americans have a somewhat tarnished name over there, and so they aren't going to get a lot, and you don't see a lot of the clubs taking Americans. You know, you see Americans concentrated at specific clubs
and specific, you know, positions. City.
Yeah, and well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty clearly goalkeeper is one that's always been, you know, labeled, you know, Americans have been considered to be of sufficient quality. Maybe your defensive midfielders, and, you know, but then you got guys like Jozy Altidore that just are not doing a very good job of representing. So it's really a tough, it's a tough climb. I mean, you know, he did well at Alkmaar, but as soon as he goes to the Premier League, his production drops off. I don't know. I mean, it's just, that's, I guess what I'm saying is MLS is, you know, you can't make as much money, but you're almost assured of playing if you're of any kind of quality.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm not sure where exactly we're going with that point. But I think just to wrap up our discussion on this, I guess maybe we should come to a couple of conclusions. One is that, I mean, I'm hoping that this CBA is drastically improved for the players over what they've had recently. I think there needs to be an opening of the purse strings. Otherwise, I think MLS is going to just flounder, and you know, and you're going to have these major owners come in that are, you know, going to exploit certain things, and just, you know, you have these other teams that just can't compete. I don't know. What else? Do you think there's any other points we ought to bring up as far as this goes?
Well, I think that we've discussed the current NASL and MLS relationship, and I think that there's probably, can we agree that there's some concern there with teams like the Cosmos and well, probably just the Cosmos and NASL, but there's really some concern about the financial implications of a team or a league that challenges MLS and starts siphoning players away, that this could undermine the model a little bit and cause some issues with the stability of the league.
Right. I mean, I think sooner rather than later they should take care of the single entity crap.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that they really need to take a major step towards removing whatever, you know, these extra designations that they have for, you know, salaries, you know, whether it be the designated player, whether, you know, I've heard impact designated player, young designated. I mean, you've got more, you know, designated players than teams actually have designated players.
Would a non-impact designated player be like some of the players that DC United signed to DP contracts over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I think that would be, you know, definitely the case.
Got it.
Yeah, you're sure as you'll McDonald's from Chicago and whatnot, you know? Yeah.
Sorry, guys. So,
but yeah, the fewer, I mean, that's my, you know, I know what MLS likes to keep players and their agents in the dark to an extent because they do not want this open, you know, oh, so-and-so is making this, that now, you know, I'm going to compete. And, you know, it's just they don't want that. But they really need to get to the point where that's less of their focus. Just understand, you know what, if you want to be a big boy and you want to be considered on a par with your Major League Baseballs, your National Football League, maybe you can't be on a par with those, but National Hockey League. I'm sure that there are plenty of MLS writers and people in the MLS office that are saying to themselves, gee, you know, MLS is pretty darn close to NHL right now as far as, you know, the attendance and maybe not the viewership numbers on TV, but, you know, that's a get here pretty soon. If you want to get there, you can't be doing this crap where you're hiding things and being, you know, clandestine about your operations. I'm not saying you have to go out and publicize everybody's salaries, but you can't have these backroom deals that, you know, alienate fans in certain markets, and, you know, down the road it's just going to create even more havoc and turmoil and just sour a lot of fans that, you know, were on board until they thought that their team didn't have a chance in this league because, you know, the LA Galaxies and Toronto FCs and Seattle Sounders all get the favors. And so, I think there are plenty of fan bases, even the ones that I just mentioned, that would stand up and applaud that kind of thing, because eventually they're going to end up back at that standpoint too. They'll end up getting, you know, LA Galaxy themselves have kind of gotten screwed in this whole process recently. I've heard a number of their fans say, oh, if we wouldn't have signed Omar Gonzalez to a DP contract, we could have gone out and got Michael Bradley or something, you know? So mm-hmm. So what goes around comes around. And, you know, I guess the good news is that this isn't going to change probably, so we'll have plenty to talk about in future episodes of this podcast when it comes to transparency or the lack thereof.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this league is just spooning up topics for us to cover every week, so we don't have to cover the second day of the Super Draft or so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Oh, ratings through the roof on that one.
So we will conclude the second part of this podcast. In this next segment, we will talk about the Super Draft. We'll mention some names, but I think we'll also go through more of a philosophical deal about the Super Draft, you know, how we feel about things and just in general, you know, how excited fans should be about the players that their team's got. We'll do that when we get back on the United States of Football show. The third segment of the United States of Football show. Robert Hay on the other end of the line. I'm Earl Reed, and we're going to finish off with some Super Draft stuff. First, just want to say, understand all of that stuff about transparency. I mean, there's so many layers to it. I hope it all came across in a thoughtful way. It's stuff that we need to talk about. I believe that it gets brushed over way too much within the mainstream soccer media in the United States. And so talking about it's important. We're always going to end up talking about these things on this show. And so we just hope that, you know, following along, it wasn't too meandering, but I hope we hit all the important points just because it's important. And I think for the growth of this league, it's very important. If I didn't already make that, if we didn't already make that evident with some of the things we've said. So
yeah. And Earl, not to pat ourselves in the back anymore, but I think we try to present it in a very good debate fashion. I think a lot of times these discussions delve into basically get into name calling and accusations of, you know, who supports what in terms of financial incentives to say certain things. And I think the nice thing about what we do is, you know, I can safely say we ain't getting paid off to state opinions. We're stating our actual own opinions here on this one. And, you know, we try and take things with how we actually feel and use it based on fact, or at least how we see the situation, and not, you know, based on who supports us or who does anything like that. So this is as honest and good of a discussion as you're going to get on this issue.
Right. And I mean, if you're listening to us for the first time, which if you are, awesome.
Welcome.
Independent. Yeah. Welcome. We're independent. We aren't afraid that we're going to have our plug pulled by anybody because we're talking about these things. You know, just, you know, stick with us. Give us your feedback. Twitter, we're on there, US of FUTBOL. Facebook is that same US of football. Email is usoffootball@gmail.com. We're each on Twitter. I'm Earl_of_Reed. Robert is Robert Hay Jr., all one word, without the underscores.
And with Jr. as a JR.
You can subscribe to us on iTunes as well if you aren't subscribed there yet. That should allow you to get the most recent episode as soon as it comes out. Lickety-split. So.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess let's move on to the Super Draft before we offend anybody.
Too late.
Not that we're worried about offending anybody, but, you know, someone might take offense. The Super Draft. This is MLS's attempt, I think, to bring in new young talent from the college ranks and from other ranks around the youth soccer in this country. I just get worried that it just isn't that consequential for the most part. But, you know, you see a lot of these players don't even end up making it on squads or, you know, flame out after the first year. And, I mean, it's great to give them a chance, but with the way it gets hyped, I don't know. What do you think, Robert?
Oh, sorry. I was taking a nap there talking about the draft. my first comment is I don't know why we call it the Super Draft. I mean, and that's another thing, the nomenclature of all of it. We touched on this in the previous segments, but the nomenclature of these different processes really confused me. Like, why is this one super?
Stupor draft.
Well, just call it the college players draft or something. I don't know. I guess that's not as sexy, but, you know, when you call something a super draft and then it turns up being this process, it's like, kind of misleading. I also think it's funny that so many trades happened in the first round. That I think that's kind of telling. It's just not. I mean, unless you're like Travis Clark, who is a genius and a god of youth soccer. What are those type of people who just knows the system and knows watches college soccer religiously? It's just this isn't really that exciting because you don't know who these players are. It's almost like a Major League Baseball or NHL draft. It's like, oh, that sounds cool, and you can go and Google these players and figure out who they are. But for the most part, like you said, Earl, they're going to either not make the team or be a role player, or I mean, every once in a while they'll come through like a Matt Beisler and be consequential. But you know, I didn't pay any attention to this draft in part because I was working and it was happening at like noon on a Thursday, was it?
Yes, right.
Yeah, see, I don't even know what day it was, but I was working and actually, you know, earning a living. But I didn't follow this on Twitter or anything like that. It just wasn't. It doesn't really move the needle for an average fan.
Well, and here's the other part of it that is, I mean, at least now you can say, since Major League Soccer has a partnership with USL Pro, you know, in various capacities, these players that get selected, now some of them are going to be probably immediately in the lineups. Some are going to take maybe 5 games, 10 games. You know, the top picks tend to find their way in eventually. But, you know, a lot of the, like, so they've got 4 rounds in this, and the final 2 rounds are going to come on Tuesday. But it's like a lot of these players would hardly see any time in past years up until last year. Wouldn't get to see much time with the club that selected them because there's just not enough time. And there was a reserve league, but that reserve league only played a handful of matches. Now with them playing in USL Pro and each team either has its own reserve team that goes in and plays in USL Pro, or they're, for instance, Philadelphia is affiliated with Harrisburg. They send 4 to 5 players down to Harrisburg, and they get starting minutes there. That helps this process. I mean, that helps give these players a chance to prove at a level where they're more comfortable, let's say, playing against other players that are sort of at the maybe just above college level. And show what they can do because, you know, a lot of these guys just aren't ready for MLS. And the ones that are, they'll come right in and fit right in. But, you know, it's just such a crapshoot in this thing. And, you know, whether you have, and what, like you said, with the trades, it's kind of funny because, you know, taking from number 1 to number 17, let's say, I mean, if number 17, you might get the next, you know, Graham Soucy. As opposed to, you know, number 1, you could get an Omar Salgado who has done nothing with Vancouver. So, you know, that's the kind of, you know, Philadelphia in their first year, they got Danny Mwanga with number 1. With number 7, they got Jack McInerney. Now, who's the one who's made any, you know, national team appearances so far? Well, McInerney hasn't appeared, but at least he got called into the camp for the Gold Cup. So, but it's like, it's a bit more random, and you know, it takes a while for these players to develop. So, anyway, so I mean, that's how I feel about it. Like, I followed it at work only a little bit, just because I was on my lunch hour, and so I could kind of like eat and pay attention to Twitter a little bit. But you know, that's not something that I think is conducive to growing your league. Not that a draft ever really would, but I guess what we should do is I put down the list of the top 10 draft picks. Our two teams were involved in the first two, so
that's kind of sad.
Yeah, well, the Union actually traded up because they had actually, so they had Chivas USA's pick, which was at number 2 from the Gabriel Farfan trade. And then they traded that pick to DC United for the first pick in order to take Andre Blake, who is a goalkeeper out of Connecticut. He's Jamaican. I believe if he hasn't already appeared with the Jamaican national team, he will soon. And this guy, according to what reports have, is that this guy has, you know, is a phenomenal shot stopper and, you know, has to learn some of the finer points of being a keeper in the league, but you know, he's basically ready for MLS. So that's kind of a wake-up call for Zach McMath, who hasn't had a whole lot of competition at Philadelphia for a while. And D.C. took Steve Birnbaum, a defender from Cal, who mm-hmm. was one of the two defenders from Cal that were very much hyped mm-hmm. and who I think sounds like D.C. should do well with. So,
yeah, he's another one of those that has been considered MLS ready just based on his college play. So kind of a no-brainer for D.C. I mean, it was interesting when I came back from I was out of the office during this draft, and I came back and just kind of checked into because something reminded me of it. I went, what the heck did D.C. and Philadelphia do? Who's Andre Blake? But for a while there, I think the interesting thing is that Patrick Mullins from Maryland, who is a two-time Herman Trophy winner, fell out of the top 10 but for whatever reason. For a while there was debate whether one of the two Cal defenders or Mullins would go number one overall. So the fact that Andre Blake went one overall was kind of a interesting scenario, but it was always assumed that Birnbaum and Christian Dean would go between one and three at some point. So that just shows the strength of how MLS ready those two were. So yeah, I mean sounds like it's a good pickup. DC actually does fairly decently in the draft, so we'll see what happens right with them.
Yeah, I mean the other team that I think was really bannered about as being, coming out on top in this draft was New England. They not only got Mullins later in that round, like you said, mm-hmm. but they also picked Steve Newman, who was with Georgetown. And so I believe Georgetown was in the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, yeah.
And Maryland made it pretty far in the – I think actually they played in the finals as well. So
right. So, you know, they've gotten two players that have, you know, college cup, you know, experience deep. And the other thing about Newman that was somewhat – I mean, at least from my standpoint, Philadelphia. A lot of Philadelphia fans had wanted him because he had – played some at Reading United during the summer. So the coaching staff, but obviously they could have taken him instead. They took Blake, but it sounds like Blake is much more MLS ready. And, you know, it's the type of thing where the other thing about the draft, you have to admit, I'm sure teams that to an extent go into it thinking, financially, Blake is a generation Adidas guy. So mm-hmm. that means that doesn't count against salary cap. You know, you look 3 or 4 years down the line, if he's really this good, you know, is Europe going to come calling? He's playing for a national team in Jamaica. It means he might get bought if he gets, or get sold by the union. If that happens, they're going to get a transfer fee. That'll help further the call. You know, so there's these financial aspects that are always going to play a part in why a team might, even though they have a goalkeeper in Zach McMath that, for the most part, played pretty well in the second half of last season, you know, why they might, make this decision and basically create some controversy within the ranks. I don't think we need to go through all 10 picks, but suffice it to say, I'm sure that we will see some good players come out of this draft. It's just really until you see them suit up, put on the kit and actually play in MLS, we might see a couple of these guys end up being national team players. You know, it just depends on, how well the teams do in developing them. So,
mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to talk about with the draft?
No. Like I said, it just doesn't raise a, it doesn't really register on the radar screen except for seeing, every once in a while who a team you follow picked and to see, if there's anything interesting about them. I mean, you could argue that, a team like Colorado really saw their fortunes rise because of the MLS draft last year, but I think those stories are few and far between. It's just kind of a sidebar interesting topic if you're really into MLS.
I guess the other thing just to point out about it, I wish I would have gone up to Philadelphia to this because, they hold this during the National Soccer Coaches Association meetings. I'm sure there's a lot of good stuff that goes on there, and MLS, I'm sure, tries to help out some of the youth coaches in this country. And so I'm hoping next year maybe I can set aside a day of vacation if they're going to do this draft you know, again, on a weekday afternoon or whatever, so I can go up and actually, see what goes on at the convention itself, because it sounds like, it's an interesting convention. It's going to be in Philadelphia again next year from what I've heard, so.
You're not going to try and get yourself signed up by another podcast, are you?
Wait, was that your big announcement?
No, my big announcement was the evolving on relegation promotion.
Oh, yeah, okay. I thought maybe you would, because you mentioned on Twitter about signing. I thought maybe you had gotten, I got pipped by somebody, for my.
No, I'm now kind of worried that you're trying to snuggle up with some of these other podcasts that are definitely there and trying to set up Wi-Fi and things like that.
Well, you have to play the field sometimes and, start.
Ouch.
Sending.
I thought we were exclusive.
Yeah.
Ouch.
It's not. Wow. Yeah. It's not always easy to stick by your hometown club. Sometimes you gotta test the waters and see if anybody out there is willing to give you a higher wage. And I'm looking for triple my wages, current wages. So.
I could triple your wages. I don't think that's an issue.
Sweet. I'm staying.
Deal.
Earl Reed has re-signed with the U.S. Football Show.
Oh God, I think both of us have been playing too much Football Manager. That's the problem. Yeah.
So, I guess the one other thing that we wanted to bring up was the finale of this, Camilo Sanveso saga with Vancouver. We talked about Andre Lewis, the Cosmos player that sounds like is going to be. Moving into MLS and, but Vancouver kind of got hornswoggled with that. And now I think they've gotten hornswoggled by Camilo and his agent. But, Robert, you want to talk a little bit about that or?
Yeah, basically, a story came out. I think it was on Twitter. Camilo had posted a picture of himself with, a jersey from a club team in Mexico. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the team's name. I apologize if those of you who are, Mexican soccer fans can send in the correct pronunciation.
Querétaro? I don't know. I probably butchered that.
Well, the important thing is he had their jersey on. And that's not a good thing when you're under contract with another team. So I've heard. So there was this big thing, and he basically saying he announced that he's a player for the team. Vancouver said, excuse me? MLS said, excuse me? So there was this whole back and forth about whether he was being transferred to this team in Mexico, whether he was leaving to go play in the Mexican League. And it finally ended up resolving itself this past week with basically Camilo is gone. He's been transferred to this other team after all of this. So Vancouver loses out on the MLS Golden Boot winner. It was kind of a weird situation just because, A, how it was first came about and how it was first known because of, a player posting a picture of himself on Twitter with another jersey on. Never a good thing. And the fact that, as all of these U.S. national team players are coming in trying to get into MLS, you have these other players from other nationalities trying to get out. And I'm not saying there's a connection between the two, but just the visual was kind of interesting from my perspective. So, I don't know if this is the first time in MLS history that the Golden Boot winner has left the league immediately after winning the award. Probably not. Probably some other historians can fact check me. But Golden Boot will not have a defender, someone defending the title next year.
Yeah, well, maybe not in this particular fashion. They haven't left, but
true.
Yeah, but the other thing about this is going back a little bit to the transparency part of it and whatnot. MLS, there's also this little issue where they had an option year or maybe even 2 years on Camilo, and they don't want to have that going to FIFA because FIFA hasn't seemed to like it when teams carry the option on a player. I mean, that's sort of an American sport thing where you have club options or player options. Well, I guess FIFA, from what I understand, doesn't like club options in international soccer or in club soccer, and MLS, as much as they have quote unquote sovereignty in the American soccer realm, it sounds like for this case, they didn't want to go and challenge, you know, have this challenge to the point where they may lose some kind of standing by having FIFA say, well, this is null and void because we don't, you know, that gives them a lot of leverage and may even strike back at what even, you know, like, because right now there's no such thing as free agency in MLS. So a player is always has their rights declared by somebody. The only way you'd have a free agency to an extent is if there's a transfer fee paid or if a player goes all the way through the layers of the waiver draft, et cetera, et cetera. Then they would, you know, be purged from MLS and have full free agency to go sign anywhere. So anyway, that's kind of a long story, but basically Camilo's gone and Vancouver is going to have to find another source for their goals. Hello, Darren Maddox.
Oof.
If he can reappear in the new year, I'm sure that lots of Cap fans would be very appreciative of that. So
it's okay, Vancouver. You still have hockey.
Eh? Yeah. You have hockey, eh? No, but
yeah, good point.
Yeah. So I think with that, we're going to end this show. Not a ton to talk about. This is, you know, sort of the silly season, and I'm sure there'll be some more silly season rumors coming about. But, you know, we'll be back in the next week or so, and we will have another episode. Robert, it's been nice talking to you and getting a chance to work through some of these issues that are going on. Not always pretty with MLS, but, you know, it is the beautiful game, so we hope that we furthered the discussion.
And Earl, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. I look forward to spending time on Twitter this week, spreading rumors about your impending loan deal to ESPN with Juan trying to block it as often as possible.
Connecticut, I don't know if I'd like that or not.
Very few people actually do. Yeah.
Although they might have moved to Los Angeles. That could be nice.
Oh, that's true. ESPN Los Angeles.
Yeah, so I don't know whether that would be the case or not. But in any event, until that happens, my name is Earl Reed. This is the United States of Football Show. And thanks, Robert, for being on. And until next time.
Ciao.
Until next time, we hope you take all 3 points.